Well, really, the depression had eased up somewhat by the time I came along, because it's just 40 years ago in 1933 that I started to work. The depression had hit in 29. I remember quite well coming out of school, and there were very, very few of us were able to get jobs. I was one of the more fortunate ones in that my family had a business, and I was offered a job in the business at $5 per week and my board. So I was one of the very fortunate young people, teenagers of that time. There were men in Barry managing chain stores who were getting, married men that is, managing with a lot of experience, who were only getting $25 a week as managers. And I'm talking about larger chain stores at that time. Now, a girl in an office in those days was getting $7 a week, and the girl in the office where I worked was getting either $11 or $12 a week, which was a fabulous amount for a girl to make, because at that time we had well-to-do professional men who said no woman alive was worth more than a dollar a day. However, things, well, they picked up slowly, actually, very, very slowly. And when they speak of the depression, it actually went over a great number of years in my mind. And really, it didn't disappear until we got very close to the war. And things started to pick up much better by, say, in 39. So there was a long period in there of really tough times that I don't think the young people understand today, when we didn't have it in Barry. Barry was one of the extremely fortunate then towns, large town, in that we didn't have any heavy industry. Barry only had, as I remember, industry to do with leather. We had a shoe factory and a heavy leather tannery and a light, later on, a light skin tannery. And these were really our only industries of any size at all. So that when the Depression hit, and in many cities, industry laid off tremendous numbers of men, this really didn't happen in Barry, because of the fact we had so few or so little industry. And of course, even in the Depression, leather was needed. It was a matter of, in Barry, most people had work, but a great many of them worked for very little. And also, at that time, relief or handouts by government at all levels was not at all like it is now. The city would have, in those days, had a welfare officer, but any able-bodied man had to work for his chip or his voucher with which he could buy food or clothing for his family. So they had projects to keep everybody working, although they were only working for a voucher, not for cash. And this was actually a very degrading thing. But at least everybody had some responsibility to work for what they got, even though it wasn't all that much. The funny part of it was that when you think of the Depression, you think of businesses going under. In Barry at that time, most businesses were family-run, and they carried on. And I don't like to name names, but a tremendous number of businesses that are still in Barry and family-owned went right through the Depression. And we didn't have the stores and businesses going under or closing. In fact, not nearly as many, in my memory, got into financial difficulty as they do in our present day. Not nearly.
Well, I'm just wondering,
I was working in the family business, which was general insurance. And in those days, we insured a lot of farms. And it was a case of going out, measuring up barns, measuring up houses, checking lightning rods, checking fuses, and so on, and quoting on insurance. And I can well remember one of the sales pitches we had in those days was that if the farmer would just keep one extra calf and let it grow up to be a cow and sell it, he'd have the premium to, or the money to pay the next time we came around in 3 years. Because the average, there were, I could remember farms, and I mean good farms, that at that time could be bought for $2,500, $3,000, $4,000, and a whopping good farm for $5,000. And a real good cow would possibly bring $35. Now, compared with today's prices, this kind of shakes one. Cars, as I remember, and I think I'm right, the Ford car was about $875. I think the Chevrolet was $975. And I know that in 1928, that would be just before the Depression, wasn't it? We bought one of the best Dodge cars made for $1,058. And that car was on the road going strong 20 years later. Now, those prices really are comparative because people were not making all that much money, and that was quite a bit of money to pay out for a car. And they've come a long way from, say, just prior to when I was born, or say around 1910 or 15, when a real good buggy was $125. It lasted for years and years and years and years, and practically nowhere else to it. So it was quite a jump up to being able to buy a car at least 75, 975, 1075. But that was the price of good cars in those days. Living, I was born and raised in Barrie, at, near the corner of right in Barrie, and since then I've been out here at Crown Hill. Now, you asked me what I did. Aside from inspecting farms, I was expected to sell insurance. And if I sold insurance away from the office, this was the incentive, was that if you sold any insurance away from the office, you got an extra bonus. But if you only persuaded the customer in some later time he came into the office, that didn't count. You had to get out and sell. Or, and my father, my grandfather, had an expression he used in the case of work horse or no oak. So you had to hustle or you didn't make those extras to buy the clothes you needed, what have you. It was very difficult to sell insurance because competition very keen, and even then they had this, well, it wasn't really a time payment plan, but in the insurance business, the agents who were having difficulty making a living would sell you a very short-term policy on a cash basis. In other words, I can remember one company that would insure your car for liability insurance for $5 for 6 months, but you had to resell the customer every year because he only took it for 6 months and put his car away the other six because the snow was too. So that this didn't happen in our business, but it did happen as our opposition were doing this and made it very difficult. And contrary to what people think, though, that money, or the premium, as we call it, the premium in those days, compared to the premium today, was very, very much in line. And not, insurance hasn't jumped. We're off the subject somewhat, but insurance has not jumped the way people think of it, because your cars today are worth 3, 4, 5, 6 times as much, and actually cost 3, 4, 5, 6 times as much to repair them. And not only that, you're paying a mechanic, because in those days the Navy was making 50 or 60 or 70 cents an hour. You're now paying them $5 to $10 an hour. So this is where the big difference comes in. And in those days, I used to pump gas one time, and it ran 25 cents a gallon at that time. Another thing you could do in Barrie in the present days, you could get a taxi, and there were lots of them even then. You could get a taxi ride from any place within the boundaries of Barrie. Now that took in where Barrie Motor Sales is, out on up the corner of Steele and lake, right through to the railroad tracks over near Manette Point, or the Fairgrounds. And you can get a taxi any place within those limits, right up north of Beaches Beach, about very little, just a little above where the bridge is now. And anything within that area, you've got to ride in a taxi for 25 cents, point to point. I'm trying to think of some other prices.
How much would it?
Case of that at all. Life insurance has actually changed very little. Life insurance is something I wouldn't want to get into because to make comparisons, no, there's price is the same. Because you see, life insurance is based on the longevity of the people buying it or the age of the people buying it. It has changed very, very little. I'll tell you an interesting thing, though. That in Barrie, and most homes in Barrie are what we call brick clad. That is a framework covered with a layer of bricks, at least 4 inches thick. That is called a brick clad house. And a first class roof is either wooden shingles, in those days, wooden shingles on asbestos, or an aluminum or steel roof. When I started, the fire insurance rate on that house in Barrie was $7 per thousand for fire insurance only. At a later date, they added windstorm, hail, lightning, and smoke damage, and reduced the rate to $6. Contrary to what people think, car insurance costs more, as I said before, because cars are worth more, mechanics are worth more. But the fire insurance on their homes, that used to be $7 a thousand for absolutely nothing but fire, today is fire, windstorm, hail, lightning, smoke damage, vandalism, water leakage, I'm trying to think of some others, falling, anything falls, tree falls in the house, and so on. And the rate has dropped all the way from that $7 for fire insurance down to around less than $4 per thousand for fire insurance. So there's one thing, and the one and only thing that I know of that's gone down greatly.
What?
It's a matter of fire protection. It is a matter of today, in those days, people just maybe carried $500 insurance on a nice home or $1,000 insurance. Today, they carry proper insurance. In other words, more in line with the value, which in a great many cases they have no choice because most people buying homes today, naturally, they are mortgaged. And the mortgagees or the banks insist that they've insured for their full value. As far as any benefit from the Depression was concerned, I think it did have some benefit to my generation in that it really showed us after an era of fair prosperity after the First Great War, it did show us that it can happen and that the economy can go flat and a depression occur. Now, I think maybe it made my particular generation overly canny and overly striving to set aside for tomorrow or for a rainy day. And I think in doing so, it got hold of a lot of people that they got over possessive about building up their estate or their wealth. And the reason was that there was not the, for instance, the hospitalization. There was no unemployment insurance. There was no hospitalization. There was no Medicare. There was none of these things to take care of you, that if you got sick, you had to be ready to pay the hospital or the doctor yourself. And if you were unemployed, you had to pretty well be able to carry yourself over that period of unemployment. Now, it made a lot of people canny, or possibly too canny, but I think now the pendulum has gone the other way, that with so many welfare or benefits available to people, that a lot of us take the attitude, well, why worry about tomorrow? It'll take care of itself in that there are agencies or funds to take care of it. And I'm afraid it's going too far the other way. That if we could only hit a middle of the road where a person is not too upset or too worrying too much about tomorrow, but still worry some about it. But they are not a charge on the taxpayer or on the government, which is the taxpayer after all, should something go wrong. So young people should think about tomorrow to an extent. Not that it ruins their lives or they get ulcers worrying about it, but give it some thought so that they are and can be independent should some adversity come along. Well, this is very hard for me to say anything about for this reason, that I have, my father before me and myself, have been so very, very fortunate. You're talking about the Depression. You know that you asked me a little while ago how many businesses went under, and businesses went under and so on. I have a record of our particular business from 1919 to the present date as to turnover or money taken in. And there has never been a single year when the year wasn't better than the year before, including and particularly during the Depression years. There was one year when we made less because we took insurance industry, we took a tremendous cut in commissions, which is the agent's share of the premium dollar. But aside from that one year, and that was only something like $130 or $40, that we have been most fortunate in, we have been able to build our business each and every single year, right? We're able to build it each year through the Depression, so that each year was better than the year before. So really, I can't answer a question like that. But that would apply to very, very few businesses. I don't know. I hate to say that I am a lifetime who ever worked very hard, but we tried to run a business possibly on a different basis. I can truthfully say that we never really, any of our setup were ever really insurance sales. That, I mean, we didn't go ringing doorbells and selling in that way. It is a case of trying to give a service to the customer in an office centrally located. And I think one of the most interesting things about our business, that not long ago I checked up the records in connection with one of our families or a family that I knew, and we had 19 members or immediate relevance with accounts in the office. And I think this is where our business has been built up. It's so old that the sons and the daughters go where mother and father went, or grandfather and grandmother. And we have many, many, many cases where we've had at one time three generations of a family insured. And as I say, in this one family, we have 19 members of a family, or, you know, one name and all related, doing business with the office for a long time. And I think this is how our business has been built up. It's an old business, and it's by word of mouth, not by a lot of advertising.
Now, the one you took the pictures of is the normal buggy that would be used by a businessman to drive around town, or for a quiet Sunday afternoon drive in the country. It's neither fancy nor strictly utility. It was just a nice road buggy with rubber tires. Now, it's a little modern to have the low wheel on it the way it does. Normally, they had a much higher wheel and a hard rubber tire. The horse pulling it is a standard bred or trotting horse. And this is the horse that was developed and was used at the turn of the century by people who needed fairly quick transportation. In other words, this particular horse was made or bred up or developed for both speed and endurance and some good looks as well. And it was the horse normally used. And they would have, each farm would have maybe one or a team of horses like this, possibly a little heavier than this one, to do some light farm work as well as pull the buggy to town or to church or wherever they might be going. Now, the other vehicle, the two-wheeled vehicle with the quite high, heavy wheels, is a dump cart which would be used around a farm. And very simply, there's a lever at the front or a clip that lets go to dump the load. Now, this would be used, I don't think too many of them are used right around here that I can find out, but they were used with a single horse or an ox. The one thing about this cart is it has a very quick hitch method, but it did require a special harness that was only good for cart work, and it was known as a cart harness. The harness had a very wide back pad on the horse's back to carry the weight, and there were no tugs that we know that went back to pull the cart. It was just a short chain running from the collar that did the pulling, and another clip hooked onto a very wide back pad, so the horse's back wasn't hurt with the weight of the cart bobbing. Well, that is just a top, what you would call a top buggy. Now, this is the buggy most commonly used with the fairly high wheels, the steel rims, and a fold-down top. Now, it was by all odds the most common buggy and was used well before the turn of the century and after as the main transportation vehicle for mother and father or for a couple. And it was strictly as comfortable as they could make it and a service buggy. Sometimes they would have rubber tires, but there's always the danger of the rubber tires pulling off, so mostly it was a steel-tired vehicle.
Did the top come down?
The top folds down. They're just those two pieces on the side there you hit with the palm of your hand, and the top will fold back. Now, that buggy, you can see the top on it. It has side curtains, and it also has a knee spread for rainy weather. There's some room under the seat to carry a few groceries or your umbrellas or whatever, or some extra clothing or a blanket. And you would travel in this buggy. It's complete there, all but possibly a knee spread for the knees or a duster spread.
And pulled by one horse?
One horse.
And how fast would they go?
Oh, well, that is something. I mean, we hear cases. I know my father would say that he had a horse that would bring him from Churchill to Barry in an hour. Now, that there are a lot of hills, and that would be a very fast horse. Another horse which he had, in his younger days when he was doing some calling at Stroud, in the evening he could leave the house, hitch up his horse, drive home from Stroud to Penetang Street in Barry, have his horse put away, and be in the house in 1 hour. And that was really, really moving, with a good horse that could also possibly go to the slower racetracks and do all right. The other vehicle up there is a surrey, and it is exactly the same as the one which I just described, except it carries more people. It has the same size of wheels, the same fold-down top, the same side curtains, knee spreads and everything, except it is a two-seater and will carry quite comfortably four people. Now, it's exactly the same thing, only carries twice as many. And normally, you would hitch two horses to it being much heavier.
When was that used?
It'd be used about the same time. And it's rather interesting, the top on that, on the buggy and on the surrey, are absolutely identical to the first tops they put on cars. And I can remember McLaughlin Buick cars having exactly that same top on it. that worked exactly the same with the same arms and all. The spring wheel buggy is an interesting piece in that cars came out in the early 1900s, and the buggy manufacturers were struggling to keep their share of the market and to prove that cars weren't all they were cracked up to be. And this particular buggy was made by the Kennedy Spring Wheel Manufacturing Company of Toronto, and that buggy was patented on August the 29th, 1910. Now, the special features about it are that instead of the wooden or straight steel spokes, that it has a curved spring set up for instead of spokes, and the idea was that it was to give a smooth ride in that when you hit a bump, the axle would move with inside of the wheel circle on these springs. And they were trying to build a buggy that would give a smooth ride and compete with the car. Also, this is the first or only buggy that I know of that had grease cups on it. And that was something that they had on the cars in those days, and apparently it carried over the buggy. Now, this idea really didn't get off the ground. I understand that the way you got one of these buggies, that there were salesmen going around the country selling shares or stock in this particular company that was going to manufacture the wheels and make a fortune competing with cars. And you had to buy a share of stock, and then $25 was paid as a deposit on a buggy, and you paid another $100 and the buggy came. So in theory, it was going to cost you at least a $100 share in the company, and the 25 and the 100, which was 200 and a quarter. And there weren't too many of them made, I can tell you. This particular cutter is really a utility cutter. The only thing that might be different is that this one does have doors on it, which made it a little more comfortable in that you could wrap the robes around you and keep yourself a little warmer. But it was really the standard winter conveyance, and there'd be more cutters like this on the road in Simcoe County or in this district or in Ontario than all the other winter vehicles put together. It's a very, very standard item. The other cutters on the other side here, the one is known as a Buffalo Speed Cutter. Now, it was the convertible or the cutter that a young person who really thought he had a sharp horse and thought he was maybe somewhat sharp himself would have. Now, it certainly wasn't comfortable in that the sides are very low, the foot sides are very low, and it was most uncomfortable to ride in and cold. Now, the one ahead of it is a real fancy cutter in that it has a tremendous amount of hand-painted scroll work on it, of whirls and swirls, and has what we call a swan neck front. But there again, it was most uncomfortable and strictly, as far as I am concerned, not utility, but rather a showpiece which a young person in, possibly in the courting days would have, or someone who thought they really had a sharp horse and wanted to show off. Now this is a cutter, or two-seater sleigh, possibly you'd call it, where the driver sat up fairly high in the front, and it would carry the driver and three other passengers. Now, the back part of it, the back rest comes off with a wing nut, and then with another pair of wing nuts, you can take off the back seat portion, and then you had that as a luggage rack in behind the high front seat. Or you can let down a tailgate and put a trunk in it. Now, this particular sleigh was used to carry the passengers from the train to the hotels in Penetang back at the turn of the century. And it was a real utility piece in that it can carry either passengers or small baggage or anything up to a trunk. This particular high-wheeled, wooden-wheeled buggy and the cutter were owned by the late Dr. B.B. Horton at Thornton. And so far as I know, were the last buggy and cutter used by a rural family doctor in Simcoe County. The buggy axles or bearings are well worn from much use, and the buggy is different in that the body is quite narrow, or the seat, Now, this had two ideas. One was that the doctor had no room to be lugging passengers around because maybe he wanted to make very quick trips and a little time to think. And so he had a single-seater buggy. Also, it had the great advantage that with the usual buggy gear being used with the narrow seat, this buggy would turn around much quicker and was easier to maneuver on the country roads and in yards when making calls. The cutter is a very standard cutter, and it was a thrill to me that this doctor in his lifetime, although he would never part with this buggy or cutter during his lifetime, that I was mentioned and apparently was to receive the buggy and cutter, as he knew if I had it, it would not be stuck on the front lawn with geraniums planted in it. This small item is a foot warmer, and it was the forerunner of a car heater, but it was used in the wintertime in cutters, and you either had a stone that looks much like a sharpening stone that you put on top of the old-fashioned coal and wood stove and heated it real hot and then slid it on the inside, or you could fill it with charcoal, and there are dampers and check drafts on it and all, and you could fill it up with charcoal and put it down under your feet and under the fur robe to help keep your feet warm in winter. The other item on which it is sitting is a whip stand, which you would find in a harness maker's shop, and this one came from through Mr. Allen, who is still in business, from the old Edward Cuff Harness Shop on Bayfield Street, where Stevenson's jewelry store now is. And it would hold 50 whips. And I remember as a child seeing the men come in, and they would turn this thing around, and it swivels around. They turned it around and try the various whips till they found one that suited them, much like a fisherman today would try the snap of a fishing rod before he decided which one he liked, because there's a tremendous difference in the snap or the handling of whips and the balance of them. And this is where he chose his whip off a rack like this. Well, this is just really a real cart, and I've traced the history of this back, and it did belong to the Barry Fire Brigade many years ago. It is a very high iron-wheeled affair, and I believe in those days it carried leather hose, and you'll notice on the sides there is the fireman's axe and the crowbar. Now, this cart was pulled by men. The front leg folds back very quickly, and two men, one on either side of the tongue, could start out to the fire with it. If more men were needed because of a hill or weight or speed, there are two ropes held by a ratchet and a crank that you could let the pressure off, and two more men could grab the loops, and you'd have four on your cart. Or if more were needed, six or eight could grab onto the ropes as they would lengthen out off a reel and allow anything up, in this case, up to about eight men to pull this cart up a steep hill or to the fire. But this was pulled by men to the fire carrying the hose. The cart immediately behind it is a fish peddler's cart, and was used in Barrie in the early 1900s and went out of use about 1912. Now, in this particular cart, there's a stand in the back where the man can stand and sit sideways in a very small seat. There's the fish box. There's a box in which he can put the cleanings when he's selling the fish, and or cutting up and cleaning the fish. There's a bell on it that he rings to warn the housewives that he's on his way, and a set of beam scales to weigh up the fish. And I have talked to people in Barrie that did buy fish from this cart. It was run by a fish peddler by the name of Williams, and did actually work the streets in Barrie prior to 1912.